From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for no compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
Here cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. All takes place. We've got to stop this inhuman race. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise in defense of Mother Earth.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you no compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about corporations, government agencies, and people who are killing the planet, and about the people who have information on saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses, so please get your pencil and paper and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this isn't couch potato radio, it's activist radio. And I'm asking you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down in a dragon at the road blockade. If you have information, news, comments, or announcements for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact information later on in the show. And we're going to start off, as usual, with activist news. Here is the Buffalo Field Campaign update from the only group in the field 365 days a year! !! Howdy, everyone. Here it is, the 21st of July, and there is a buffalo bull outside of the park. Last reports yesterday evening were that he was somewhere off Highway 20 near hostile lands. As soon as someone called us about the bull, we were on our way. We reconned the area for about 5 hours and didn't find him. The two local Montana Department of Livestock agents were out looking too, but it appears that they didn't find him either. We have two patrols out today. If anything happens, we'll be there. This is the same area where the bull was killed a few weeks ago. We will keep you posted. And tonight's update from today is that that bull was tranquilized and taken into Yellowstone Park and released. So that's good news. Back to the update. Sundog Corey Massio, a longtime Buffalo Field campaign volunteer, was sentenced last Tuesday to 17th of July to 6 months in jail, with five suspended, meaning he has to serve 30 days in the Gallatin County Detention Center for trespass at the Horse Butte Capture Facility. That's public land in the Gallatin National Forest. He is also serving 10 additional days for contempt of court. He was representing himself and was charged for contempt for even saying the word buffalo during his trial. Corey owes $1,045 in fines and fees. We urge you to write him a note or letter of support. He can receive mail at Gallatin County Detention Center, Corey Massio, that's M-A-S-C-I-O, number 20035, and the address 611 South 16th. In Bozeman, Montana, 59715. Once again, that address, Gallatin County Detention Center, Corey Massio, M-A-S-C-I-O, number 20035, at 611 South 16th, Bozeman, Montana, 59715. And back to Yellowstone area. The berries should be ripe soon down in all the creek beds. Every night there is a different sunset, dramatic, vibrant oranges and purples, blues and golds reflected back down from the clouds to the rugged surface of the lake and the mountain's peaks. Last night, three of us saw a huge mountain lion hunting in the tall grasses across the pond where we were on patrol. We are looking forward to repairing the roof on this old cabin soon, as it desperately needs it before the rapidly encroaching winter season. The campaign still has our gas-guzzling Ram Charger for a vehicle. The personal vehicles of the various people in the campaign here have all broken down in the last week and a half. The good news is we found a very reliable four-wheel drive Subaru for a reasonable price, about $1,600, and our friend is willing to sell us his reliable Subaru for $800. If we could get these two vehicles, we will have a reliable car for tabling in Yellowstone, one for the Tetons and the Ram for patrols and hauling firewood. The bad news is that we are absolutely strapped for cash right now and don't have the money for either or both of those. Thank you all for your continual support, prayers, and contributions to save the last free roaming buffalo in America and those of us who are here to protect and defend them on their land of their ancestors. All donations to the Buffalo Field Campaign are tax deductible, and thank you to those of you who have sent food donations recently for the buffalo. The Buffalo Field Campaign can be reached at P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. That's Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. Or you can send them email at buffalo@wildrockies.org. That's buffalo@wildrockies.org. Or you can visit their webpage, www.wildrockies.org/buffalo. And the big news in California is that the Citizens Campaign for Old Growth Preservation Coalition launches a campaign to save California's old growth. This is it, folks. A coalition of business, social, religious, and conservation organizations announced yesterday the submission of a ballot initiative aimed at preserving California's remaining ancient and old-growth trees. Trees alive in the year California became a state, 1850, would be spared if this initiative becomes law. This initiative is our last best hope to preserve what remains of the unprotected old-growth forests of California, said Dan Hamburg, for the former North Coast congressperson and currently executive director of VOTE, the Action Committee, one of the initiative's sponsors. In doing so, we are not only saving trees, we are saving a bit of our humanity by taking responsibility as stewards of God's creation, or goddess's creation, as you may be. Polls conducted by the coalition show that 65% of Californians favor preserving what is left of the state's ancient forest heritage. These trees are part of our heritage, not only as a state, but also as a nation and a planet, said Julia Butterfly Hill. Our government should be the ones protecting this international heritage, but because they've failed, we, the people, have decided to protect the last of this living legacy, she added. A growing number of business leaders also favor saving the last of the old growth. Warren Linney, chairman of the board of Broadland Communications of Santa Rosa and owner of the Sonoma County Wood Products Company, remarked, "As a businessman and a firewood cutter, I value the heritage and living ecosystem of an old growth forest. Old growth is important for the tourist economy of our state and serves as a living museum for our communities and families. I urge Californians to place this initiative on the ballot and vote for it." The initiative applies to all old growth trees and stands on California's non-federal forest lands. Forest lands are defined as lands capable of growing a crop of trees of any commercial value, including state-owned forests and private property. It is estimated that less than 3% of the native forests of California are still standing. Most of this is already protected in state parks. The initiative would put the rest off limits for logging operations and other activities that could damage old-growth trees and stands. And religious organizations from around the state and the nation have rallied to support this initiative. God gave us free ecosystem services, of which trees play a major role, said the Reverend Sally Bingham, chair of the Commission of the Environment of the Episcopal Diocese of California. Trees are essential for our survival, and the older the tree, the more valuable for the health of our planet. It is our responsibility as people of faith to preserve these irreplaceable trees for generations to come. The Central Conference of American Rabbis recently passed a resolution calling for the safeguarding of the patchwork of remnant old-growth forests that remain. Trees are like the air we breathe in the Jewish tradition, said Walnut Creek optician and chair of the Coalition for the Environment and Jewish Life, Dr. Barak Gale. Our Torah is called the Tree of Life, and we are taught that if not for the trees, there could be no human life, yet we continue to ravage our forests for decking, trim, and toilet paper. Groups supporting the initiative include the Voice of the Environment, Rainforest Action Network, the Religious Campaign for Forest Conservation, the Green Party of California, the Episcopal Church Diocese of California, Ancient Forest International, Friends of the Eel River, Southern California Ecumenical Council's Eco Task Force, the Bay Area Chapter of the Coalition on the Environment and Jewish Life, the World Stewardship Institute, Christians Caring for Creation, and the Environmental Ministries of Southern California, and the VOTE Action Committee. Dr. Gordon Liebitz, chair of the L.A. chapter of the Sierra Club, and Medea Benjamin, founder of Global Exchange and recent Green Party U.S. Senate candidate, have endorsed the initiative, as have several prominent entertainers, including Bonnie Raitt and Woody Harrelson. Martin Litton, the founder of the Sierra Club and leading preservationist of giant sequoias, helped to write the initiative. And moving to news from Santa Cruz, California, shots have been fired at tree sitters in Santa Cruz Redwoods. This story by Haley Johnson and Savannah. On Monday, June 23rd, activists were shot at by an unknown logger or violent opposer. No injuries were sustained, but definite escalation of violence is going on. Monday evening, tree sitters in the Santa Cruz Redwoods off of Highway 9 made a desperate call to Blackbird, an Earth First supporter. They were calling him from a cell phone 110 feet up in a second-growth Douglas fir, where they were being shot at by an unknown logger or violent opposer of Earth First tactics. The connection over the cell phone was muddled with static, but on the other line, Blackbird clearly heard a gunshot during their broken-up communication. He asked them to repeat what was happening to verify he had heard correctly, and then he told them to hang up and call 911, as he would, too. A sheriff was sent out to the scene, but the gunman had already fled. The sheriff offered to escort the tree sitters off the property to file a report and most likely be taken into custody, but tree sitters, being familiar with police tactics, opted to stay in the tree and continue the month-long ongoing civil disobedience. Organizers are now planning the next action to take up the awareness about the situation. Delaying or ideally stopping the cutting is the goal of the activists, as well as ensuring safety to those occupying the trees. This is not the first violent threat. The previous weekend, loggers hurled rocks at the platform. Luckily, no one was injured, but items were knocked off the deck. On another day, one logger was ordered by Dave Van Lammet, the registered professional forester, to cut down the traverse lines to connected trees. Blackbird was on one of those traverse lines, but the logger would not be deterred and intended to cut the traverse, letting Blackbird drop to the ground. Fortunately, and unbeknownst to the logger, he was hooked onto a safety line so he did not fall. Numerous threats have been shouted at the tree sitters, one logger saying he would climb up the tree and rape and kill the tree sitter. Earlier in the month, the logger stabbed a dog to death, thinking it was one of the activist dogs, but later learned that it was a fellow logger's pet. Allowing this violence to continue has only caused it to escalate, and the threat of death is more and more present. One woman has spent time in the tree sit and can comment on the status of the threatened forest. I was up tree sitting for 3 days. Each day I heard about 15 trees being cut down. It sounds like death or the forest's heartbeat coming to a stop. All I can see around me is second and third growth. Branches on every tree are broken off. The trees look sick, and none of this forest is thriving. The only old growth you can see are black stumps. I can see that the forest is endangered, and I'm surprised that less than 2% of old growth forests left in the world, that more people aren't adamant about saving Santa Cruz Redwoods. And in a further story, on Tuesday morning, three people locked down to two different gates at the Sykes 2 tree sit where all this has been happening. The back gate action held for a little while, but loggers eventually broke through. But the protesters on the back gate escaped without being arrested or harassed. But at the front gate, things were different. There were two protesters locked down at that gate and a couple of support people on site. During the next couple of hours until the sheriff showed up, there was some physical violence. One of the protesters was thrown onto a pile of logs and hit in the back of the head with a fist by one of the loggers. The other protester was dragged around and had some cuts and bruises. So obviously things are escalating in the Santa Cruz woods. If you want more information, you can call Earth First voicemail, area code 831-425-3205. That's 831-425-3205, and get more information. And 70 people protest genetic engineering of trees. This in a story by Greg Harrington of the Columbian staff writer, saying there's no way to stop the effects of genetically engineered trees from doing damage worldwide. 70 people from as far away as Vermont gathered in the Columbia River Gorge a week ago to protest an international biotechnology conference. "Why let the genie out of the bottle?" asked Ann Peterman of the Native Forest Network in Burlington, Vermont. "We want a global ban on genetically engineered trees." As the protesters stood at the entrance road to the Skamania Lodge, golfers 50 yards away teed off on the par 3 17th hole. Guests inside the lodge could not see the rally, but scattered around the inn on the hillside overlooking the Columbia River were 15 to 20 Skamania County deputies and the Washington State Patrol troopers. Another 20 Clark County deputies were in the area, but out of sight, ready in case the protest turned ugly and they were needed, said Skamania County Sheriff Chuck Bryan. "We're here to protect this facility and the people," Bryan said. "We're not here to stifle the right of free expression." But the extra police weren't needed. Save for a few profanities shouted by a couple of speakers at the rally, the protest was orderly. The week-long conference featuring scientists and forest industry people from around the world is about tree biotechnology in the new millennium, according to the conference brochure. Genetic technologies have the clear potential to provide more trees from less space that are better able to withstand disease, it said. But supporters of genetic engineering say science can develop trees as row crops for specific purposes such as making paper, thereby saving natural forests from logging. But the protesters, who have established several anti-genetic engineering groups across the country, each with its own webpage, see nothing good coming from this science or the Skamania County Conference. "This would put genetically engineered trees into parts of the world where native forests have been cleared," said Peterman. "Soils would be stripped of nutrients, indigenous people would be displaced, insecticides would be exuded into the soil, impacting good and bad bugs. Eventually, you get pesticide-resistant insects." In essence, the protesters said in interviews, they fear that even if science successfully creates new strains of trees for specific purposes, it will be impossible to prevent pollen from spreading to natural forests and orchards. Then the strengths and weaknesses of the genetically engineered trees will spread to native trees, they argue. Genetic engineering is being paid for by companies that care about their profits first and foremost, said Craig Rosebrough, who describes himself as the spokesperson for the Earth Liberation Front, but not a member of the group. "I've learned not to trust the various corporations." Perhaps some of the protesters' antagonism towards scientists gathering for the conference was eased when Steve Strauss of the Oregon State University walked to the rally and engaged several protesters in discussion for at least an hour. One of Strauss's tree-growing projects at Oregon State University was targeted by the Earth Liberation Front vandals in March. "People should have concerns about biotechnology," Strauss said. "I have concerns. It has to be done right." As Strauss was talking with three or four protesters, the rally continued 20 yards away with chants, folk songs, and banners, the largest one saying, "Biotechnology, giving pollution a life of its own." And here's some upcoming events in Oregon, if you're in the Portland area. The Bark Hike is going to take place on August 12th. The Bark Hike, if you want more information about the Bark Hike, they leave from Portland, Oregon, and you can call 503-331-0374 for more information about the Bark Hike on August 12th, or you can visit their webpage, www.bark-out.org. That's bark-out.org, or once again, 503-331-0374 for more information. And also coming up is the Forest Markets Campaign Action Camp. This is the 13th annual Rainforest Action Chautauqua, taking place August 12th through August 19th in Sonoma County, California. Come and learn organizing and direct action skills for the fall season of activism and beyond. Come and share skills with organizers working on the Tree Free Campus campaign, campaigns against Staples, Boise Cascade, Citigroup, and other nasty corporations, frontline forest defense tactics, anti-globalization, and much, much more. The event is sponsored by Forest Ethics, the Rainforest Action Network, and, of course, the Ruckus Society. If you'd like more information, contact Liz at forestethics.org. That's Liz, L-I-Z, at forestethics.org. Or give her a call, 202-234-6790. That's 202-234-6790. Once again, that's the Forest Markets Campaign Action Camp, August 12th through the 19th in Sonoma County, California. Moving to news, a judge has halted logging in a roadless area. Conservationists won a victory in federal district court last week when a judge ordered the U.S. Forest Service to halt logging in a roadless area of the Six Rivers National Forest in California. Earlier that week, loggers had begun falling trees in a roadless area along the Trinity Alps Wilderness in Humboldt County. The next day, seven conservation groups led by the Sierra Club filed suit to stop that logging. That project is the first timber sale in a California roadless area since the January release of former President Bill Clinton's National Roadless Area Conservation Policy. Today, we want a reprieve for the forest. Had we not stepped in, the Forest Service would have continued to log one of California's most wild forests, said Anthony Ambrose of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. The massive logging project is designed to cut 1,050 acres and produce 20 million board feet of timber, about 4,000 log truck loads. The lands were burned in a 1999 wildfire. The Forest Service is using fire protection as a Trojan horse, said Brian Vincent, California organizer for American Lands. They've rolled out a project in the Six Rivers under the guise of fuels management and unleashed an army of chainsaws, bulldozers, and helicopters and trucks. Today, the court stepped in and said enough is enough. In addition to logging more than 320 acres in a recognized roadless area adjacent to the Trinity Alps, the proposal also logs in a critical watershed that has received tens of millions of dollars in salmon restoration efforts over the last 20 years. Unnecessary and environmentally destructive salvage logging in an area that is one of the success stories for salmon restoration is foolish, both economically and environmentally, added Ambrose. Horse Lindo Creek is one of our best restoration success stories, and we should be doing whatever possible to protect that investment. And moving to animal news, shrinking Arctic ice threatens the Inuit and polar bears. Global warming shrinking the Arctic ice cap is making life harsher for Inuit and polar bears and might paradoxically chill Europe by shutting off a warm ocean current. Inhabitants of the Arctic say that higher temperatures, which scientists say are rising faster than anywhere else on Earth, are adding to the stress of life near the pole rather than giving a slight relief from the bone-chilling cold. For Northwest Europe, one of the biggest fears of global warming is that it could spell the reverse, a shift to colder temperatures by disrupting the Gulf Stream, which brings warm waters northeast across the Atlantic. In Greenland, Inuit hunters are falling through the ice in places where it has always been solid, while prey is harder to track. Migrating caribou in Canada are wearing themselves out, slogging over slush that used to be easily crossed permafrost, and some polar bears are having to wait weeks rather than normal until December for ice to reach land around parts in the Arctic Rim. The ice lets them venture out on to gorge on seals to build up their fat reserves for winter. The late arrival of the ice caps weakens females, who then have trouble giving birth in the winter. Temperatures in the continental Arctic are rising more sharply than anywhere else we know about on Earth, said Olav Ornheim, head of Norwegian Polar Institute. Temperatures may be rising as fast in Antarctica, but there are too few measurements to tell, he said during a flight over the North Pole from Norway and back to mark the 75th anniversary of the 1926 flight of an airship by Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen. Near the poles, the rays of the sun strike the Earth from a low angle, passing through a thicker layer of atmosphere than at the equator. As the world heats, any faint heat in the rays bring to Earth near the poles is more likely to get trapped by greenhouse gases than to bounce back into space. Ornheim estimated that the polar ice has shrunk by about 3% in a decade in the last 40 years, and that temperatures in the continental Arctic on land in Russia, Alaska, Canada, Greenland, and Nordic countries has risen about 1 degree Celsius per decade. The ice, about 4 meters or 13 feet thick at the poles, has also been thinning. Climate change is adding stress for us, said Sheila Watt-Cloutier, president of the Inuit Circumpolar Conference in Canada. The Inuit total about 150,000 people in Russia, Canada, Greenland, and Alaska. And our hunters are falling through the ice a lot more frequently, she added. Inuit, also worried by toxic pollution and a thinning ozone layer, are now sometimes even getting sunburnt. Climate scientists say that global warming is being fueled by people burning fossil fuels like coal and oil by cars or factories. These release greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide, blanketing the planet and driving up temperatures. U.S. President George W. Bush has criticized in March for abandoning the Kyoto Treaty on reducing emissions of greenhouse gases, saying it was too expensive and unfair because it excluded developing countries. Jan Pronk, head of the UN Forum on Climate Change and a leading critic of Bush's withdrawal from the Kyoto Agreement, said global warming was a threat to the Gulf Stream. It's not what most people think, that global warming means everything everywhere will become warmer. On the contrary, it could mean a decrease in temperatures in the parts of northern Europe, Pronk, who is also Dutch environment minister, told Reuters. The Gulf Stream sweeps past Northern Europe and then into the depths of the Arctic Ocean. There, the water becomes cooler, heavier, and more salty, and eventually swirls out southwards past the coast of Greenland beneath the Gulf Stream in a flow 10 times the rate of the Amazon. Orheim said the natural injection of cold water into the Atlantic helps circulate nutrients into the ocean thousands of kilometers to the south, and he said any disruption could have disastrous results for Europe. And we're going to take a little break here and play a little musical selection. This one's called The Power Is Turning. By Casey Neal.
As it comes alive, a world is emerging. See it in the gleam of the serpent's eye. The power is turning, the power is turning. Rogue spirits are waiting, anticipating. Voices long forgotten again will awaken. The fire in the eye of the ego, deep and regal. No voice rivals the song of the past. At last, at last, at last, the power is turning. The wild sea is burning. Watch as it comes alive. A world is emerging. See it in the gleam of the serpent's eye. The power is turning, the power is turning. This is not the end of the world, it is only the beginning. An awakening, a reckoning, the nameless is returning. Rising from the western ocean, shining off the sea. Carried by a magic wind, alive again, the power is turning, the wild sea is burning, watch as it comes alive, a world is emerging, see it in the gleam of the serpent's eye, the power is turning, the power is turning, the power is turning, the power is turning.
And Earth First Radio will be right back. Stay tuned.